Miss an interview? Listen to it now at 1043thefan.com. Brought to you by First Bank. You work hard for your business, so should your bank. Talk to a First Bank business specialist today. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC.
Sports Radio 1043 The Fan. Every Saturday morning, it's Terry Wickstrom Outdoors. Terry takes you inside the outdoors. You know, hunting, fishing, camping. It's Terry Wickstrom Outdoors. Now, here's Terry.
All right, let's get right back to the phones. Joining us as he does every week at this time, one of our favorite contributors, well-rounded into so many aspects of the outdoors. You see him on Facebook, you see him on other social media, you've seen him on my TV shows, and he's here every Saturday. Nate Zielinski, good morning.
Good morning, Terry. I like that intro. That was a good one.
Yeah, you know, every now and then I kind of like you. So, No, you've been doing this a long time. You are a great resource, my friend, in a lot of different things. I know you want to talk hunting, but before I let you go, if we don't run out of time, we had a question about walleyes I'm going to ask you that was texted in during the show. But big game hunting. In the next segment, we're going to actually talk about picking out a rifle. But whether you're archery or rifle or muzzleloader, it's time to be getting ready, isn't it?
Absolutely, Terry. You know, I mean, I would say that we started this conversation a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, you could flirt with the idea that maybe it was a little too early and maybe it's just for the people that really want to be prepared or out there. But where we're at now, you know, and in, you know, approaching the second week of July, it really is time 100%, no matter what. You know, on the gear side, we keep talking about that. We have less supplies out there. The retailers, you know, are sold out of so many things. So it's time to get prepared for that because it might take time. But more so, now we're into the hardcore scouting aspect. I mean, if you really think about it, even though it might seem early, you know, your sheep and goat seasons are literally starting here in less than a month. Your pronghorn archery season is 30 days away. So we are into it. I mean, it is that time. And then obviously, I think more than anything, we haven't discussed this, but we probably are approaching one of the more successful hunting seasons that we've had in many, many years here in Colorado. And that's going to be for a couple of reasons. Number one, we're kind of on a new format for dates. Colorado Parks and Wildlife changed some things up. They changed, you know, the third season rifle, they changed archery, but they pushed the seasons later. This is one of those things that the average hunter, I would say, has been begging and pleading for years and years. You know, the average archery hunter, you know, normally our season starts, you know, like third week of August, you know, or that last week of August when we're starting that season, and then wrapping up, you know, towards the end of the third week of September. And we always wish we had a couple more days, you know, so if the rut is late, we have more time, or at least once the harems are built, the bulls will be extremely vocal. And we always wish we had more time. Well, this year we have that time. So the archery seasons are later. You're going to hunt all the way until the end of September, which those final days are going to be pretty epic hunting. So we have a later season. Then even the fourth rifle is going to be later than it has been in years. And even next year, it's going to continue to get later. With that being said, everybody that has those later rifle hunts are now going to have by far a better opportunity at a deer rut. So those mule deer rut, it's going to be in full swing where normally we're just on the beginning half of it. This year we're going to have a lot more of that rut activity, so that is huge. And even the wintering bulls, we're going to have more wintry conditions, hopefully being later date, which is going to push those bigger bulls, even the number of bulls, you know, kind of through their winter migration-ish, you know, type pattern. So, again, I think the opportunity in this coming hunting season is going to be greater than we've ever had. So more the reason to prepare for it, to scout for it. Then you kind of throw the additional kicker on there, and this is like asking the most loaded question in the world, but everybody wants to know, hey, when are the elk going to rut? You know, and you can talk to the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, you can talk to hunters worldwide. Everybody's got their theory. Hey, it's a moon cycle thing. It's a temperature thing. It's just a genetic thing in nature, whatever. You know, you talk to me, and I hate to say it, but I kind of have my theory on it. And my biggest thing is, you know, dry grass. If you have really green growing grass, tons of moist conditions, those animals tend to, you know, Mother Nature's telling them the food's here, keep eating. You know, it's usually when that grass dies off, when you start seeing those fall temperatures, that's to me, generally speaking, the sign when I see these animals starting to rut early. If I track the last 20 years, you know, 10 years as a guide and 10 years just hardcore hunting. The years that we have drought style conditions, warm summers, our grass is not as in good of shape. When we start seeing that grass die off early, generally speaking, it's at least one of the signs that our rut kind of comes at least normal and or possibly just slightly early. And I would say right now we are lining up for those conditions. Things are starting to get pretty dry up in the high country. Again, our grass is obviously alive and thriving, but I do think it's going to have a somewhat of an early effect on the grass. And I am right now planning and anticipating at least an on-time and or slightly early rut. So it's really lining up to be an epic season. So get out there. Scout, find animals, do your research, build the education, and take advantage of what might be one of the bigger seasons that we've had here in a while.
Well, another take on what you were talking about, drought conditions, not the rut even so much, is the fact that we've had some rainy years over the last couple of years with moisture, and it disperses those animals with the limited water they may have this year. We don't know if we're going to get a lot of rain going in yet. It could make scouting and locating animals a lot different because of the water too, right?
Absolutely, for sure. And, you know, I mean, you can use it to your advantage in a lot of situations, but you have to build the pattern. So, for example, you know, last year we had a lot of moisture getting towards the beginning of that pronghorn archery season to where a lot of guys scouted out water holes. They were prepared. And we had enough moisture in July and August where all of a sudden water holes were popping up everywhere to where the average guy hunting a water hole, the pronghorns had, you know, 10, 15 choices of where to drink. And even though they're slightly more patterned on one, they had options of others, which made those waterhole hunts, you know, not that it was harder, you just had to spend more time, where normally you might be able to hunt 1 or 2 days, you might have had to put a week in to have that chance at a pronghorn coming into that waterhole. On years like this where there's more drought, where there's less water, you're going to have more opportunity of finding that one good water hole, and obviously you're going to have a lot more animals utilizing it, so you can use the drought to your advantage. Same type thing on elk. You know, if all of a sudden you have a ton of water, you have water holes everywhere, you have wallows everywhere, you have creeks flowing everywhere, they can drink everywhere. So like you said, they will disperse, you know, in smaller groups because there's water everywhere. When you have that lack of water, all of a sudden you're going to get more migration from the animals to where a normal day the elk might move, you know, a couple hundred yards or a half mile from their bedding grounds to their feeding grounds to their water hole. When you have lacking water, they're going to go further. So their distance from the water to the feed to the bedding areas will be greater, which keeps them on their feet longer, allowing you to have more available time to scout them, and then come hunting season, more time to hunt them. So that drought situation, even though it's dry and crunchy, you know, sometimes it's hot, which, you know, limits the time you have to hunt these animals. Sometimes it can actually increase your opportunity because the animals are moving around more and they're not so secluded to a very tight pocket of their daily migration. So, again, more reason that I think this hunting season is really going to be a good one.
Yeah, I think we're headed for a good hunting season. I think that one wild card that none of us know how it's going to affect anything is there's going to be more hunters out there, license applications, well, at least more in-state hunters. I haven't heard the numbers for out-of-state hunters. So you might have to put in a little more boot work to find out where you're going to hunt and make sure. I think it's going to be really critical this year to have some backup spots, don't you?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, in every situation, every hunting season, when I scout, you know, I can go out there today, find my animals. I actually scouted this morning. You know, find animals, and everybody gets so excited. They find the animals, find patterns. I take that same situation. I kind of build zones or levels. I say, hey, that animal right now is, you know, XYZ from my starting point, whether I'm hiking or, you know, driving or whatever. And I'll say, if that animal gets blown out, where is he going to go? Where's the next available spot where that animal can find food, bedding, water? You know, where is he going to go if something does pressure that animal? And I almost build layers where I say, hey, this is zone one. This is the ideal spot. But if he leaves here, you know, maybe the next spot is, instead of 2 miles in, maybe it's 4 miles in. But I scout that as well. I kind of prepare myself to where, hey, you know, this is an easy access spot. You know, it's too good to be true. when these animals get pushed, where are they going to go? And I kind of build those patterns, even though there might not be animals there. I want to know where the bedding grounds is. I want to know where those, you know, elite pockets of water are, just so as things change in the hunting season, I can adapt very quickly to accommodate that and stay on top of those animals and create that success. So that's a huge one. And then, you know, right now, scouting wise, our animals, especially, you know, the males, your deer, your elk, your moose, they now have enough antler growth to where we can really judge maturity. Now, I'm not saying this is just for the trophy hunter. I mean, a lot of people hear me talk about, you know, giant antlers, and they think I'm just trophy hunting. But the biggest thing right now, I can really start to break down the harems in my head. So, I mean, I went out the other day, and I had a summering group of cows and calves that was hundreds of animals. Now, those animals are not going to stay in a massive group of 100, 200, 300 come hunting season. They're going to break down into smaller harems. So as I'm overlooking bulls, I'll look at, you know, a big hillside. Maybe it's got two or three drainages in it. And I'm going to look at those bulls. I'm going to say, hey, I, you know, amongst the 15 bulls that I can find, how many of those are mature? How many of them are going to hold a harem? How many of them are going to be satellite bulls? How many of them are immature bulls? But you can start to break it down to where you know how things are going to unfold. So you can say, hey, this is only going to be one group of elk. So, you know, I'm putting a lot of my eggs in one basket. Or if you can say, hey, I think, you know, another month or so when they start, you know, getting some hormones flowing, it's going to break up into six different groups. That's going to be an ideal opportunity because you're going to have a lot of different animals to chase. So while I'm scouting now, again, I'm looking for animals. I'm doing my best to judge maturity level. Hey, that's a very dominant bull. That's a, you know, a mid bull. That's a very immature bull. Then I'm looking for, again, for bedding areas, where they're bedding, looking for where they're feeding. What type of grass are they feeding on? Where's those elite water holes? You build all that intel and everything just flows so much easier this coming hunting season.
So I agree. Real quick, we haven't got much time, but I want to change up. We had somebody on the text line that wanted to know about what type of a rod we would recommend for trolling bottom bouncers with braided line. I have my idea, but why don't you give us your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so, you know, when it comes to live bait rigging like that, you have so many options, and a lot of people are either going guide fishing with me or live bait rigging. I tend to avoid the bouncers, and I run a smaller rig. So I'm running a small cannonball rig, so 1/2 ounce to 1 ounce cannonball weight, 4 feet of line to a smaller weighted system. So I can run that on a spinning rod. I want a lot of load rate. So I want a slightly slower action rod so I can really sweep the rod to give the fish the chance to take that bait. So I don't want a fast action rod. So for me, all my live bait rigging and that type, you know, slow trolling, controlled trolling, I'm using a 7-foot, 3-inch rod. I'm using like a medium power, but, you know, a fast to moderate bend just so when that fish takes the bait, I can do a sweeping hook set. It's going to land a lot of fish for me. So that's my take on that general rig right there. But again, I'm not pulling a lot of bouncers. I'm a little bit smaller defined on the live bait rigs.
Well, when I wrote some articles for In Fisherman on this, I did a lot of testing of rods with bottom bouncers. And the biggest mistake, one of the things you said with a rod that has some give, was people trying to set the hook too soon or setting it all. A lot of times just the action of the boat. Most people, when they set the hook on a bottom bouncer, pull the bait away. So I used bait casters because I was pulling about 2-ounce bottom bouncers during this test period. And I used about 7 to 7.5 foot fiberglass rods. So they had actually a more of a parabolic bend, and you could see them load up and give the fish a time to take the bait and turn in a medium action. And then I put braid on a bait caster, but I think both of those are great options. Nate, we are way out of time. We've got anything coming up real quick?
Yeah, absolutely. We got Catch Rate next Wednesday. So again, tell your friends, come to Chatfield next Wednesday, Catch Rate. It's an unbelievable experience. You go to our Facebook page to learn more about it. And yeah, we'd love to see you there. And other than that, get out, scout, and take advantage of it. Find some animals, and we'll be back next weekend.
All right, Nate Zielinski, Tightline Outdoors on Facebook, tightlineoutdoors.com, and he's all over the internet. Thank you, my friend. We're going to take
you
a quick time out. We're going
to
take a quick time out. When we come back, the hunting department at Jack's Outdoors is going to join us, and we're going to talk choosing a rifle for a first-time or new hunter right here on Terry Wickstrom Outdoors on 104.3 The Fan.
Oh. You work hard for your business. So should we. That's why First Bank offers commercial real estate loans, business lines of credit, and online cash management solutions. With tools and services designed to make your business run easier, your day could have less this and more this. Visit eFirstBank.com/business to learn more. First Bank, business banking for good. Member FDIC. First
Bank. Banking for good.